Welcome to the National Federation of the Blind's 2025 Senior Retreat, a time for empowerment, connection and growth. A special thanks to Janie Degenshain, Zoom administrator, and her team for a seamless retreat. Your dedication makes this event possible. Thank you for joining us on this journey.
For though they may be parted, there is still a chance that they will see. Let it be.
Performance here, and we are very pleased to have Glenn Crosby here. Glenn, not only should you do whatever it is you're going to do for this hour, but we want you to do something that we did on Sunday, and that was take no more than 2 minutes to introduce yourself. I will tell everybody that Glenn is president of our National Senior Division. And other than that, he gets to decide what else he wants you to know. Glenn?
So I would say to you that the senior division is made up of people just like you, and we would love for you to come and be a part of us and participate, and we do a number of activities. And this retreat is a major activity that we organize and provide annually. So that's just one of the things we do. My background is that my wife and I were in business for ourselves for over 45 years. We were in the food business, had a number of locations around Houston, Texas, including some vending machines and other snack bars and little hamburger joints and things like that. I have been a part of the National Federation of the Blind since 1967. And so, I have a lot of experience in, this organization, been a part of it, been glad to have it. We are what we call, an extended family. Once you get connected, you will begin to feel that. I think everybody that's been around a while, does feel it. And what that means is you don't have to know a person personally. If you have questions and they have the answers, we'll try to get you connected to those folks, and they'll be glad to visit with you and explain things to you on just about any topic you can imagine. So that's what our family does. We also try improve public policy as it regards blind people and blindness. We try to expand opportunities for blind people, and that particularly has to do with education and job opportunities, and also opportunities for seniors. And I think people kind of forget that our country is in what a lot of people refer to as a gray tsunami. And of course, as people age, many of us lose our eyesight, right? So we're getting more and more blind seniors than we've ever had before. And mostly they find themselves isolated, and they don't have any connection. And we try to find those folks, and we try to bring them in, and we try to let them know what's available to them, what kind of programs and services are available. And of course, access to information is a major, major hurdle for people once you cannot use your eyes to get it, reading and other things. So that's one reason why we talk about technology as much as we do, because that's your basic information source. However, we also provide NFB Newsline, which again is accessible by any phone. You can access it with your other personal devices as well. but Newsline has around 600 publications on it, a lot of newspapers, including national newspapers and international newspapers, and a thick stack of magazines that surely will satisfy most people's reading curiosity. There's cooking, and somebody mentioned recipes a while ago. There's recipes, of course, in some of the magazines, or there's magazines about recipes, but also every newspaper just about has some section that has recipes in it. So Newsline is a very, very great information resource, and it's very, very easy to use, and it's free. So those are the things I would bring to your attention. And we can have some questions if you have questions for me, personal, want to know more about me later. I'll be glad to answer them if I can. Oh, before I skip, we have four grown children, seven grandchildren, and one great grandchild. So that's our family. And one area of importance to all seniors, but particularly blind seniors, is managing health care. And we find ourselves having to manage taking prescription medication. Many of us do. We need to learn techniques of how we can go about that safely and do it reliably. And so we do talk about that quite a bit. Is Shelley Koppel with us yet?
Yes, I sure am.
All right. So Shelley has also been a part of the National Federation of the Blind for many years. She's a very capable person. She's now found herself in the gray tsunami part of it, of life. She is here this afternoon to talk to us about managing health care at home. Go ahead, Shelley.
Okay, hi. Welcome, and thank you for the invite to come and speak today. I'm secretary of our National Senior Division, and Glenn has me beat by about 3 years. I think I joined the Federation in 1970. I was just out of high school, and I got recruited to go to a training center in the state of Idaho, which is where I'm from. And a lot of the people there were longtime Federationists, and the rest is sort of history. I've lived several different places with different jobs and married and different things like that. So I now live in the great state of South Carolina. I'm in West Columbia, which is just across the river from our capital city. And my husband is Frank Koppel. He's been a member of the NFB for probably equally as long or close to it as I have been. And we also have raised 3 children between us and have 6 grandchildren. And they're the joy of our lives, and we just are, had been in good health until kind of the unexpected happened for me in 2023. And I'll talk about that, but I thought I might start from a little bit different angle of the fact that all these things that we're learning in this retreat are to help us to be more confident. And hopefully, with some of the skills that we're talking about of technology and the use of Braille and various kinds of technology, and just common sense. I've heard Janie talk about how you can identify things by putting a rubber band around them, and I've done that many times. We just want to live life as in the most confident way we can, and I think this is a good place to learn and to start. And along with that comes organization. And so in your home, most of us have some sort of organization to the way we do things. Sometimes my organization gets a little out of whack, and I have to regroup and pull things out of cupboards and drawers and restack it and redo it and throw away and reorganize and stuff. But I've got a system to the way that I handle things in my home. And that is also important. It doesn't matter how high tech or low tech it is. And if it's a very different way that you do it from somebody else, or maybe somebody's techniques you've heard about here make sense and you would incorporate those. I've been known to do that as well. We had a session a year ago or so on some organizational things from a lady, and the way that she managed some of the drawers in her of her clothing, I ended up taking her up on some of the techniques. I thought they made sense. So we love to learn from each other. The title of my talk today was How to Deal with the Unexpected. So as we live our lives and in our neighborhoods, I've heard a lot of us talk about how the neighbors get to know you. And even though they don't maybe know you on a totally personal level, they know you enough to wave and say hi and know kind of some of your habits of coming and going, or maybe you do your own shoveling and they see you outside shoveling snow, or they see you going to the mailbox. Part of that flows over into knowing who you can go to in the time of an emergency. And also, if you have a spouse or significant other, that would possibly be the first person you would think of. Maybe they're not always available. So there's some other person, a family member or a close friend that you might have that you would go to in times of an emergency, something you would need help with that, you know, it's come upon you suddenly. And maybe it's going to be a trip to the doctor or the emergency room or something. You also want somebody who you know well enough, if you can, that's going to speak on your behalf and know your independent style and know the confidence with which you live life. And that can, I've sometimes found medical people to be the most unhelpful people. Sometimes they can just really come from an angle of, oh my gosh, you're blind. Oh my Lord. You know what, here, can I help sit you down, you know, in a chair? I mean, to that level. And I've also met people that are very respectful, would, if you need to fill out paperwork, will take you to a separate room where all your business isn't being broadcast to everybody in the waiting room. And they're very respectful that way. So I've seen both sides of it, but having somebody that could help speak on your behalf, because you don't know what this emergency might cause and you're flustered. And my thing is, I can lose my words. I know my thoughts, but I can lose my words because I'm flustered. And that can help you get information. Maybe this person could help take notes. They would at least be there to listen to what the medical people are saying to you, so that you've got two sets of ears hearing the same thing. And that as you're trying to process and you're feeling badly in the process, they can help you decipher what some of the directions might have been or what the layout of the plan of action is going to be. I've found that to be helpful. I never wanted to sign up for that sort of thing, but I've found it as I've gotten into this more gray hair area of life that it's a very helpful thing to have. And asking questions. Do not be afraid to ask questions. This is your life. It's your body. If you're dealing with a medical thing or whatever the emergency is, it could be needing to make a flight to go somewhere on a sudden notice, maybe a family member's in danger or in need of help. Asking questions, you know, getting the most information that you can about whatever you're facing is very helpful. And no question is too small. Don't ever forget that. Sometimes when we're in this new stage of losing vision, it's like, well, I don't want to come across as not seeming to have a good head on my shoulders, or like I don't know what I'm supposed to know already in life. That doesn't matter. At that point, you're needing to be to get clear information. You're needing to clarify what's going on, and questions are the best way to get those things accomplished. Another thing you might need to have figured out is, where do you keep information? Like, I'm thinking insurance cards, maybe your key, you're keeping information. Okay, let me start with this. Insurance cards. Okay, you go to a hospital or a medical appointment you've never been to before, they're going to ask for your medical insurance cards. And in my wallet, I've got those in the various little pockets in the wallet that they fit in, but I've got them labeled. I've got them written with Braille on them. Now they don't ever, and people go, oh, wow, somebody Brailled that for you. You know, that's really cool that they do that. And I go, no, they didn't do it. I did it. When I get a new card, the old soft paper ones, I would actually Braille right on them. Social Security number, SSN. I'd think of a way to I'd abbreviate it. SSN, Social Security number. SSC, Social Security card. MED, Medicare. I'd do things like that. If they were a hard plastic, I would find a way to put with maybe a Dymo labeling tape or something. And you know Braille, I'd put a little note on there, and there's a place, even on a debit card, that you can put Braille, and it does not interfere with what part of the card goes in the machine. You can do that. Sometimes another idea that I've come up with for like a debit card or some kind of a card like that would be to make a little Braille on clear plastic paper, Braille all the numbers kind of in sets of four, like four or five lines with about eight or nine characters on it. And that way, including your spaces, and that way you've got the Braille that matches the numbers on your card. And it's, you may memorize your cards. I do also, the ones I use the most, but in time of an emergency, your thinking could get a little skewed with nervousness and whatever. So it's good to have those kind of things Brailled in a certain way if you can. That's a good reason for learning Braille. Numbers and the alphabet can be very useful for labeling things. And you may not be at a position in life of really caring about reading a book in Braille, but maybe to play cards for recreation, or in this idea of identifying things, it can be very helpful. It helps us be literate, and that's a really important aspect to things. Knowing where your keys are, knowing where your phone is, anything like that, that your personal ID. Now, another thing I do on my ID, which isn't necessary, but I like to know how it's facing in my wallet. Is that my picture facing out, so that if I could just turn it around and show somebody, would they be able to see my picture? So again, I put a little tiny piece of tape on the back left corner, right corner of my card. And that tells me, I feel it real quickly. It doesn't interfere with anything. Nobody else really even notices, but it lets me know which is the back side of the card and which is the front side of the card. If I can know things like that, I like to. So knowing where these things are, having a wallet in your purse where your keys are may be very handy. Those kinds of things for points of an emergency. So my emergency situation happened August 25th, 2023. And we'd just come back from our state convention the weekend before. And so this is like Friday, the end of that next week. And it's a warm day. We're sitting out on the patio, just kind of enjoying the coffee or something in the morning. All of a sudden, I find myself in just immense pain in my stomach. And I had no idea what it was from. And it was kind of quick that I discerned that it wasn't just like needing to find the facilities or anything like that, that it was a pretty serious thing. My husband is also blind. And so our quick fast track thing to do would be to call the ambulance, which is what we did. And they came to the house. And of course they'll put the IV in right there. They actually let my husband ride to the hospital in the front of the ambulance, which we thought was very generous. We asked, we didn't expect them to say yes, but they did. And so I got to the emergency room, and because I'd come in the ambulance, it was a little faster track to the back of the room where the doctors were going to be seeing you and stuff. So they determined that I'd had a perforated colon. And I'm thinking, perforated colon? First of all, what exactly is that? And second of all, how in the world did something like that happen? And so that day, the doctor on call at the hospital came in, and after I'd been there a little while, and they'd done some testing, figured out what the situation was, and that it was pretty serious. And he said, we'll try you on antibiotics overnight. If it's not good, we'll take you to surgery tomorrow morning. So next morning, Frank had stayed overnight because the doctors tend to come around fairly early in the day. And he did. And Frank goes, well, do I have time to go home and kind of clean up and come back when is surgery? And he goes, oh, about 45 minutes. And Frank's going, oh, well, okay, I'm here. So had surgery, found myself in the hospital for the next 8 days. And when I came out of all the medication and woke up and stuff like that, I found out that I had a colostomy bag, something totally foreign to me. I'd never known anybody that had had that, just really quite a shock. And so the next days were filled with, the first few days were filling you with a lot of medication that's going to kind of level you out, get your body back in sync like it's supposed to be, find out how this colostomy bag is going to be working. And they'd taken 10 inches of my colon at that point. And they said, there may be more surgery later, but right now that's where you're at. And so there came around an educator from the hospital. And she was a lady that was probably close to retirement age, but she'd been there for a long time. And my blindness didn't seem to throw her off. She knew that I needed to learn about how to deal with this thing for myself. And I expressed that I would want to do that as much as I could. And she came up with some creative ways of helping me to figure out. Her husband was kind of a project person. He liked to work with tools and stuff. And she came up with a little circular kind of piece of PVC pipe that I could use as a guide to help me learn how to put on my colostomy bag and stuff like that. Now, there were aspects of it that I did not feel as comfortable handling, but anyway, in the hospital, they were very good about this. And so this process took a few days to kind of get familiar with. And the other thing was, it was over a holiday. It was over Labor Day weekend. So I think there was a little delay in getting out, maybe because of kind of the holiday weekend and staff and how familiar I was, how comfortable I felt with everything. So I get home and now all of a sudden I've got new products to deal with. I've got that I'm going to have to use all the time. There's going to be my unfamiliarity with just all of this and living with a bag. And they said I would for a while. They didn't know for sure at that point how long, but we knew it was going to be for a period of time. They set up health nurses that came to the house twice a week and would help me with an aspect of changing. You don't just change the bag where the waist goes into every day, but you also have a sleeve that's kind of over the whole system on your side. And the nurses would come and help with that aspect of things, because there can be, you know, just like infections and stuff, sometimes colorations of things change or whatever. And I did have lots of questions, and they wanted to be sure that questions were answered and that I understood how to use these new products and stuff that I had. And so I had talking about organization, I had a little hanging bag thing that was in the bathroom on the towel rack that had all my items that I would need every day for dealing with this colostomy bag. And there were products that the nurses ordered that came in the mail. And I found a place in a dresser that I could put those that was near, that was handy to get to and all that kind of thing. So I learned what all the various aspects of caring for this colostomy thing were. And in the process, I found people. We did some research and found people that I actually knew from my church that had children, two different ladies that ended up having children. One was more in her 20s, early 30s, and the other one was more like an 18-year-old son that had been living with colostomy bags their whole entire life, or the majority of it. And that was very fascinating to me. And these ladies were very helpful. They ended up being part of my team of people that I would call on if I had questions, besides what the nurses and people that came to the house would tell me. A couple of times, one of the friends lived within about 10 minutes of my house. And on a couple of occasions, I had kind of a blowout to where I was like in a panic, didn't know how to quite go about all this. And I'd call this gal, Stacy was her name, and she'd go, "I'm on my way." And she just knew that with the kind of newness to all of this and whatever I was dealing with, it, that it was concerning to me. And so she came over and would always put me at ease. She had a very calm personality, and it's like, okay, this is, we'll do this and this and this. And it, in about 10 minutes, it'd be over with. And she'd sit and visit, so that it made me feel like I care about you. I'm not just here because you're blind and you need all this help, but she truly just spent time with me. And that meant a lot to me. Those kinds of people in my life were very helpful. My husband, Frank, did an awful lot to help out, because I was sitting on the couch a lot for a while, kind of recuperating from all this that I've been through. I could eventually get up, and about a few weeks, I was up and around and fixing meals again and doing some things. Your more housekeeping things that are a little more involved, he just really pitched in and did a lot to help me out. And that was very important. Let's see, there was something I was going to catch here. Anyway, I had a thought and I lost it, so I'll just keep moving on. So in the fact of being organized, I did have phone numbers that I kept track of for the company who sent the nurses. There was a 24-hour on-call number so that if I did have a question at any time or a concern about when the next nurse was going to come, or maybe they hadn't communicated quite as quickly as I thought I would hear from them, I could call this organization. So I kept their paperwork and phone numbers on my coffee table so that I didn't have to, you know, worry about where to find things. I kept them really out and open. And also just doctor appointments in general. I didn't have a whole lot. I had kind of a, you know, a month, well, the first 2 or 3 weeks and then a month. And then come January of 24, I was able to have a reconnection surgery where they put my colon back together. In the process, they took a little more of the colon and another aspect of it. And, but I was able to be reconnected. And I found out later that from one of my nurses that 10 years prior to this, that would not have happened. So I felt very fortunate that, I'd been able to have that surgery and, be reconnected. So that eliminated the need for the bag. The wound itself healed up really well. The surgeries I had, especially the last one, was a robotic one. So really there was not a lot to recover from. There were little, I would call them punch holes. Sort of, they didn't feel like deep wounds or anything, but you could tell they evidently fill your abdomen up with air, and then they kind of, you know, they figure it all out, you know, where's the exact spot to go in and fix what they need to fix. And so that was the reason I had all these different places on my abdomen, and they all healed up. A majority of them were kind of surface, but everything is healed really well. And one thing I would say is just keep up with your different, can't think of the word I want. When it's time to go for a scheduled test, like your colonoscopy or a heart checkup or whatever you're needing to do, when it's designated that that's when you should start checking up on things, I would highly recommend that, because through the years prior to all of this, I had dealt with some diverticulosis, which I found out through colonoscopies. I dealt with polyps a little bit, which I found out through colonoscopies, and they definitely aren't fun. They're less fun when you have a colostomy bag, because I did have to do that for my last surgery, which was not as bad actually as I thought it would be. But so getting those checkups are very crucial, I think, as we age, because they help us to stay on track. It keeps us familiar with the medical person that's the expert in that area. And then when you have things crop up, I think it keeps us a little more less afraid to go in and get things checked on, because we've been there, we know the doctor. And I know that since COVID, sometimes it's hard to get doctor appointments or you have to wait a long time, but hang in there, because those things are very important. Your health is very important to keep up with like that. And I'm very thankful. I've just been very blessed to otherwise be healthy. I'm pre-diabetic.